prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, hey, welcome back to another episode of Supreme Radio. It's Tuesday. I didn't do a show yesterday because I was traveling back from Florida. I spent the latter part of last week and the weekend with Aaron Singerman over at Redcon One and his family, and what an amazing company. Very proud of what Aaron has done. And so I'm back in the studio, but it looks like today's going to be the only show for this week because 4th of July is upon us, and I had plans for 4th of July, but we have unbelievable shows coming back the following week, especially one we're doing on Vailisi, which is a new female aphrodisiac for women who have libido problems. And actually, it's just the bremelanotide, which we've talked about, you know, a decade ago. But there's a lot of good research on it. So we're going to be launching the following week with that show. You won't want to miss that. And we have lots of good shows after that. But today is a one-day show, and we are going to have a very, very short week. And I hope everybody has a wonderful 4th of July. This is an important week to celebrate who we are as Americans. I love the 4th of July. I am a patriot at heart, and hope that you enjoy it as well. And without further delay...
Calling all Blueprint Army. Fall in line. It's time for the Blueprint Power Hour with Coach Rob Regish on the Superhuman Radio Network.
Hey, Rob, how you doing?
I am doing fantastic, which I'll get into a little later in the show.
Cool.
And hope you are, too.
Yeah, I am. I just got back from Florida. I feel good. I'm not rested yet. I need a good night's sleep tonight. But I'm trying a new sponsor's product that I'll talk about shortly if they come aboard. That's
great.
A sleep product, so I'm really excited about that.
Listen, I have a public service announcement. I just picked up a message on Facebook from, I'll call him Dan, and it's a warning on an ephedrine import that I sourced that I had given years ago, now being... not what it says it is, meaning he ordered his quote-unquote fat burner, and this is the source from the UK for those of my guys who know what it is, and it was flagged by customs, who ultimately told him that upon laboratory analysis, it was really DMAA, and he was let off with a warning. If you know, my advice to you would be if you're contacted by customs at all, just let it go. They usually say you can just let it go or you can still try to claim it. Let it go. If this is you and you are ordering from that same source, understand you have evidence via his website that what you really thought you were buying was a caffeine, green tea, etc., fat burner, and not ephedrine or DMAA. So that seems to be a change because I know, you know, previously his stuff was ephedrine. I could tell you that from using it every day of my life. But this might be a situation where he switched to DMAA because it was cheaper or for whatever reason. Just understand that dynamic is out there. If you want to be safe with your ephedrine, you can pick it up. It's as close as your local pharmacy. They keep it behind the counter. You want Primatene pills for asthma relief? You got a bad case of asthma. They will not ask you what it's for. You don't need to tell them what it's for. You will have to present your license and sign for it. It's a simple measure that the FDA and the powers that be are using to make sure that the bad guys don't buy too much ephedrine every month.
Yeah, because they turn it into meth.
Yeah, they use it as a starter ingredient.
Right. Right.
So, look, the upper limits of what you can buy per month is still more ephedrine than anybody is ever going to need, including me. So that really says something.
And if you are using ephedrine, you should take off from time to time. Because it does have the ability to do the same things that amphetamines and cocaine do, and that is cause blockades in the kidneys.
Right.
So the same thing happens to people who take long-term amphetamines, you know, that they start out as a diet pill. They keep taking it. We see this in children who take ADHD medications. They have the same blockade effect in their kidneys.
Right, which is an important factor and certainly something that I'm experiencing now. So,
now, you've been off the ephedra for how long now?
Well, interesting story. My creatine levels finally came back, and meaning they are now within the normal range. Now, that was, in all fairness, that was 2 days after cold turkeying the ephedrine. So there had to be some more downward movement going on already. But, you know, I will see what subsequent tests bring, perhaps with and without ephedrine.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see if you move forward without ephedrine in your life over the course of, let's say, the next 6 to 8 months, if you never have another rhabdo experience again.
Yeah, I mean, it will. Prior to the last episode, my previous one was 9 months before, so we'll see. You know, I tend to think it was, number one, pushing my training loads in the final week before I was scheduled to take a week off, and crucially, dropping Synthogen that week, because my thought process was, look, I'm going to be off all next week. I don't need a super speedy recovery. But be that as it may, and I'll get into this in the tip of the day, we are all going to learn a lot about how much is too much and the effect of various nutritional supplements and drugs on creatine kinase levels and the health of the athlete.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, exciting stuff going on. I'll get into that more in the power tip of the day. But I wanted folks to know about that ephedrine situation from the UK supplier. Just go to your local pharmacy until I can get it figured out.
By the way, those of you who were trying to watch our Facebook Live, we had some camera problems on Rob's end, so we'll get that solved before the next show. So we're just doing the old-fashioned podcast, the old-fashioned way. All right, so the first question is, who or what started you? It's several parts. Who or what started you on your journey to physical culture? Was there anything that really lit the fire, like maybe girls, or you got beat up and picked on as a kid?
You know, I can say I never got beat up. I was never picked on as a kid. I will say that girls were an issue, just not in the way that most people would think. So bear with me. This gets into my upbringing and the ultimate effect it had on my psyche. So I learned from my father in the way that he dealt with my mother how to treat a woman, right? That's your first and most powerful example. Additionally, my mom always told me, you got to be straight with girls, you got to hold doors, you got to pull out chairs, you know, every so often flowers to let them know you're thinking of them. And so I'm 16 years old and I start dating. And over the course of the next 5-10 years, guess where that advice got me?
Married?
How about nowhere? Women, at least the women that I were dating, had no interest. They all say they want a nice guy, but especially at that age, they don't
want nice guys. It's the God's honest truth. Let's be honest.
They want excitement. They want drama. They want to break up with you and get back together, hopefully, you know, multiple times per week. And most of these girls went back to their ex-boyfriend who either, one, didn't have a job, two, drank, or three, hit them. Sometimes the trifecta. So the message that I got at that and during those formative years was that I must not be big, strong, and physically impressive enough. You know,
isn't it funny that that was the conclusion you came to?
Yeah. And that was driven by other things, don't get me wrong, right? Who were the male role models in the 80s? Schwarzenegger, Stallone, And the big one for me, Hulk Hogan. He's out there on national television every week. He's the man. He's 6'7". He's 303 pounds with 24-inch arms. These guys have the women, the toys, and all of the toys that go with that scene, plus the money. So what message does that give me, right? It's got to be me. I'm just not big and strong enough. Consequently, and this is a little embarrassing to admit, but it's the truth, I was so soured on those experiences that for the first 2 years of college, the only two women that I spoke to were my mother and my grandmother. That is the God's honest truth. And so what did I do with my time? I spent all of it on the following three activities: studying, lifting, and eating and sleeping. It started to add up to me that, you know, I like I said, I needed to get bigger and stronger. And when I got to be real big, it still wasn't big enough. So, you know, believe it or not, I am of the opinion that it helped that I had unrealistic role models, right? I mean, Hulk Hogan, 6'7", 303, 24-inch arms. Whatever you think of professional wrestling, that is a huge man. And genetically, it wasn't in the cards that I get that big. But you know what? You shoot for the stars, at least you get to the moon, right? I also...
But what messages did you receive in life that told you that women like that? Because the reality is, wrestling is a guy thing. I mean, it's a sausage fest. When you see who's watching wrestling, there's not a lot of women watching wrestling. It's all guys. And I ask this question because, I mean, I suffer from some of the same things you do. You know, that for some reason, if I was stronger and more muscular, women would like me more.
Yep.
And that wasn't true when we were young, and it's probably not true for most women today, especially with the dad bod being so popular. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know.
So where did you connect those dots that, oh, if I was bigger and stronger, women would choose me?
Everything that I was seeing and experiencing. I'd go to the movies. I'd see Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'd go to the movies. I'd see Rambo, right, Stallone. Every week on television, I would see sold-out crowds, 20,000, 30,000, to watch these wrestlers who are all enormous, especially if you were brought up in WWE territory up here in the Northeast. I mean, those are the guys that were pushed. And then I combine that with my experience with women, and you throw in the fact that I was an extreme introvert and I internalized everything, and it had to come out somewhere. And that somewhere was the gym. Now, interestingly enough, I was vehemently anti-drug at the time. And that extended to bodybuilding drugs. I had the opinion that they were evil, that you didn't need them, and that it was cheating. Okay? A few other things, though, helped in my favor. I happened to get lucky. And in a day and an age without the internet and without virtually any quality sources of information, I got lucky by coming across the right guy, Eddie Azzaro, who took me under his wing, former powerlifter, taught me how to eat, sleep, train, the whole nine yards. Powerlifting USA was part of it, and training programs that were advertised in the back of muscle magazines that I happened to hit at an ideal age. You know, at 18, 19, I was doing super squats. I was doing Big Beyond Belief. I was doing a program called Super Strong in 6 weeks. Looking back, these were the programs that, you know, I really needed. And let's face it, like I always say, it's a million times better than walking in the gym and doing what most people do and winging it. So, ironically, when it came time to introduce me to weights, the one man who disapproves of that activity more than anything, my father, did it. What he did was he took me to our parish rectory behind the church where they had a dozen universal machines. He walked in the gym. He introduced me to the guy running the place. And he said, "This is my son, Rob. He needs to get stronger legs for baseball." I was a pitcher. And he wasn't wrong on that count, but what he didn't count on were that all of those other seeds were being sown. And when I met the guy who ran the gym, his name was Bob. He was only about 5'10", 185 pounds. But to me, who was 6 feet and 140, he looked enormous.
Huh.
I can distinctly remember having the thought, if I can get half as big as this guy looks, I'm going to wear tank tops during the winter. I'm going to show off everything I got. And I went on to make almost every mistake in the book, but I regret none of it, including learning almost all of those lessons the hard way. It was an experience that made me who I am today, and I am a better person for it. So that's a little bit about who got me into it. The fact that he never counted I'd fall in love with it. And I can honestly tell you, after my very first workout, I knew this would be something I would be doing for the rest of my life. That's the only way I can put it. You throw in my experience with girls, the extreme introvert in me, and some psychological qualities that I'll just say led to me. I was willing to do things that most people weren't. I was willing to squat 315 until I couldn't do any more, strip 90 pounds off, 2 1/4 till I can't do any more, strip another 90, 135 till I couldn't do any more, back away from the bar and perform plyometric jumps until my legs gave out. You know, for some workouts, believe it or not, that was just a starter. So I was willing to go places other people weren't. And it's interesting, though, because everybody has a slightly different story. Some, it was all about girls. Others, they got beat up, right? Other kids were fat kids, and they got teased. Super skinny kids and got teased. I did. The word skinny still sets alarm bells off in my mind in a really bad way. To put it bluntly, I have body dysmorphic disorder. They call it bigorexia, the reverse of anorexia. When I look in the mirror, I do not see a guy who weighs 240. I see a guy, I still see the guy that weighs 140. So, you know, in my mind, I used all of that to my advantage. Other people might say, look, you're leading a really imbalanced life. Well, maybe, but it makes me happy.
The next question kind of follows this one very nicely. What was the very first supplement you used, and how did it work? What were some of the more memorable ones that you used, and what did you learn from taking them?
The very first supplement I used, I walked into GNC, and I look at these hundreds of products lining the shelves and thinking, wow, why would anybody use steroids?
Yeah, right?
Got all this stuff. The very first one I bought, though, were Joe Weider Crash Weight Gain Number 7 tablets, which immediately made me wonder what happened to Formulas 1 through 6.
Huh.
Needless to say, they didn't work. My very first dose, I misread the label directions, and I think I wound up taking 3 times as many as what they were suggesting. Because it said something like, 7 tablets 3 times a day, and I did all 21. I got a horrible sugar feeling, and I threw up. I didn't care, though. I ultimately finished the rest of it before moving on to other stuff. And the next thing was dibenkozide. I don't know if you remember that. Dibenkozide and ferulic acid, a.k.a. frack, were the two of the next ones. Needless to say, they didn't do jack. Next up, though, was hot stuff, and that did put on 5 to 10 pounds, the very first batches of that came out. And it's been theorized that it was spiked with a little something beyond what was on the label, and I would concur with that. The next two were unique. Cybergenics, Total Bodybuilding System, and IcaPro. I somehow scrounged up $100 to buy each of those. And we laugh about those today, okay? We joke about them. But to my mind, they were, at least in two important ways, a lot better than supplements today, because at least they came with solid training and diet advice. If you look at Cybergenics and the supplements that went along with it, it was really the first NO2 type protocol, using large amounts of arginine pre-workout, you know, manipulating carbohydrates. I got to give Scott Chenery props here. He was way ahead of his time. As far as IcaPro went, they had everything from an aromatherapy bag that you sniffed before the workout. I think it had like peppermint, mint, and other stuff in it. And believe it or not, I thought that worked. And there's a lot of research showing that it does. But be that as it may, it also came with what I would call a world-class training program at the time. You know, Vince McMahon hired Mauro DiPasquale and Dr. Squat, Fred Hatfield, to come up with the diet and training advice, respectively. Those two are the real deal. So looking back, you know, I would say those were solid purchases. Overpriced, sure. But at least I got to keep the training and diet advice long after the pills were gone. Next up was a very interesting time in the supplement business. Creatine hit the market, and then Ultimate Orange. For me, Ultimate Orange was much, much more impressive. It featured extracts of ephedra, the herb, which was chock full of ephedrine alkaloids. As well as caffeine and some green tea, branched-chain amino acids, and a unique carbohydrate that he referred to as quadricarb. Now, at least for the time, I avoided OKG and HMB, so that was a positive, and later on, free HMB. So I was smart enough at that point to just not buy every new thing that was hitting the market. Next up, though, was Androstenedione, introduced by Pat Arnold, which I considered junk after running it several times. And then, for a period of several years, and they kept coming out with them, I avoided pro-hormones until the first 4-AD transdermal hit the market, 4-Androdiol. That was Biotest Androsol. It worked. It gave me a fantastic, I don't know, a feeling of well-being, I'll call it. I gained anywhere, from, I think, between 5 and 7 pounds. And ultimately, I got up to things like methyl 1 test, which, look, anybody who's used that stuff knows. It's all water. You lose it as soon as you come off. And it was horribly suppressive. After just 3 days, you were almost 100% shut down. And liver enzymes through the roof, HDLs tank, LDLs go up, the whole nine yards. It just wasn't practical. You certainly couldn't use it to build your body. Long after those were gone, and those were all made illegal in 2004, I did Synthogen in 2012, Tranquilogen shortly after that, and then Progenitrix. I have had a pre-workout in development for far too long. And the way it's looking, it might still be a while. I'll conclude by saying this on the pre-workout. If it doesn't bear fruit, some kind of fruit shortly, I'm going to have to move on to doing another product. I haven't decided what that'll be yet, but I will entertain suggestions from the SHR audience. I want to hear what people want. And from there, I will apply my best efforts insofar as developing something that you take it, and like Synthogen or Progenidrex, it undeniably works. You are far better off for taking those than if you're not taking them. So I look forward to doing another one.
We're going to do one more question, then take our first break. This one says, if you had to encapsulate your best training advice, what would it be?
I would tell you first to focus on strength, because if you do that and you're successful, a lot of other things tend to fall into place. I would do that, versus doing too much volume or too much frequency. You will almost always do better with less volume and less frequency, but more intensity. So if your training is not going the way you want it to, the answer can be found usually in intensity, volume, or frequency. Intensity is by far the most important. Now, this isn't rocket science, right? Add weight to the bar almost every session. If not every session, you can make these other workouts focus on the speed of the barbell with lighter weights in the neighborhood of 50 to 60%. If you are ever confused about what to do with your training, and a lot of guys are suffering from analysis paralysis, default to Bill Starr's classic 5 sets of 5. There are so many ways to make progress on that if you think about it. You could add 10 pounds a week. You could add 5 pounds a week. You could add 5 pounds a week just to the first 2 sets, et cetera, et cetera. Do that routine justice, and you will be rewarded every time. Also, probably the best advice I ever got was, leave a rep or two in the tank. You will almost always be stronger for it with any reasonable frequency schedule. That's not to say that high-intensity training, one set to absolute muscular failure, doesn't work. It does, but only for short periods, right? And ultimately at the expense of your central nervous system. HIIT works. But again, only as long as it takes your body to adapt to it. I would also tell you to incorporate age-adjusted bodyweight work. So if you're 50 years old like I am, 50% of my training is with weights and the other 50% with bodyweight. Ultimately, you want to think about this when putting together and trying different methods. You would never shoot your best round of golf with just one or two clubs. You will always shoot your best round of golf with all of the clubs in the bag. Keep as many arrows that work in your quiver, and you will always have something that works to switch to. That would be my feedback on training. I could talk for days about that stuff, but those are the heavy hitters.
Good stuff, good stuff. I'm going to take a break, so sit tight, everybody. We'll be right back with more of the Blueprint Power Hour. Whether your goal is to build muscle or burn fat, you'll find everything you need at Redcon One. Need help getting a good night's sleep? Try Fade Out, or the most popular pre-workout supplement on the market today, Total War. Sign up for their new Transformation Challenge and win $10,000, or shop for apparel that people at the gym will know that you are serious about your training. Need a testosterone booster that works? Check out Boomstick. Whatever you need, you'll find the best quality supplements on the market at Redcon One. Go to RedconOne.com. That's REDCON, the number 1.com, or go to superhumanradio.net and click the Redcon One banner ad today. There's a phenomenon today. So many of us sit for hours each day. Slowly, our bodies respond by shortening certain muscles. The psoas gets shorter and shorter over time. It leads to lower back problems, stiffness when standing, and inhibits your running performance. Now there's PsoRite.com. That's PsoRite.com. PsoRite is a device that allows you to stretch your psoas muscle and return them to normal function. And it does it better than any stretching movement or chiropractic adjustment. adjustment can. You can use it in your home, office, or at the gym. Experience what thousands of people already know. Check out PSO-RITE.com and save 20% off when you use the code SHR. Imagine how successful your life would be if you could double your focus, double your mental energy, double your problem solving, your creativity, your willpower. Sounds too good to be true, right? That's what I thought until someone handed me a bottle of Qualia Focus. Qualia Focus is a mental performance formula that combines 24 of the most powerful molecules on earth to noticeably boost your brain power within just a few days of taking it, or your money back. Qualia Focus blows coffee away, but a serving actually has less caffeine than a cup of coffee. That's because it boosts brain power the healthy way. Just go to neurohacker.com. That's NEUROHACKER.com and enter coupon code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. And a serving of Qualia Focus costs one-fifth of that coffee you're drinking right now. Unlike coffee, Qualia Focus nourishes your brain in a comprehensive, healthy way for amazing brain power you noticed in just a couple days. That's neurohacker.com to try Qualia Focus and discount code SHR at checkout for an extra 15% off. All backed by a 100-day money-back guarantee. Qualia Focus is a life changer, I promise you. Try it now for amazing brain power at neurohacker.com.
Quest Nutrition makes bars, cookies, chips, and pizzas out of complete dairy-based proteins. Our products minimize net carbs and sugar without sacrificing taste. Each delicious chocolate-flavored chip, cookie chunk, and crunchy crumble is custom-made to maintain Quest macros. It's time to enjoy foods that work for you, not against you. It's time to enjoy your Quest.
Men and women, you've heard about hormone optimization. Do you feel like it's something you want to look into? RenewLifeRx.com is the place to start. Their doctors can help you with the solutions. RenewLifeRx.com has a simple process for lab work, consultation, and taking a deep dive into where your hormone levels can be improved. Superhuman Radio listeners get 30% off your initial lab work and consultation. Go to RenewLifeRx.com to schedule your no-obligation phone consultation today. Feel younger, get in better shape, and be more productive at RenewLifeRx.com.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. Don't hate us because we feel good.
Welcome back. Okay, so the next question is, where do you see supplements going in the next 10 years?
Yeah, well, unless some well-heeled people put a lot of time and effort into their work, it's likely going to be a lot like the last 10 years, which is to say, pathetic. You can go back 25 years to when creatine was introduced. Other than pro-hormones, not much moved the needle. Now, that's the United States. In Europe, the situation is better because there are a large number of pro-hormones that exist there, and the regulations on all things that are test-like are not nearly as draconian as they are in the U.S. Here, you know, where that avenue has been effectively shut down by the, you know, Anabolic Steroid Control Act and subsequent legislation that was signed in 2014. Now, that's not to say there might be other things that are done. Things like, well, I think it's likely that some dodgy stimulants are going to come down the line again, like, let's say, Stimulant X, the old Stim Extreme, craze for those that believed it contained methamphetamine, and the situation that I mentioned at the top of the show. You know, guy thought he was going to get ephedrine, and it actually turned out to be DMAA. It's an easy game for a supplement company to play, and frankly, the FDA and the DEA are so slow to respond to these issues that by the time the first or second batches with the good stuff, you know, are in and out of circulation, they're going to get a product that they're going to test and not find anything, you know, dodgy in there, in all likelihood. Look, if you want to make a lot of money in the supplement business, lace your first batch or two of, you know, pre-workouts with something extra. People love pre-workouts. They're one of the three most commonly used products, those being pre-workouts, protein powders, and creatine. And people buy a lot of them, and word of mouth travels fast. So I wouldn't recommend doing it, but understand there's a high likelihood that it will be done again. With respect to the rest of the market, I honestly feel that the next steps are to take a quality ecdysterone and build upon its research-proven ability to add lean body mass, not at an absurd rate. We're talking 5 pounds over, let's say, 10 weeks, which is exactly what the ECDI study that I spoke to on the past previous episodes has shown. And that study, once again, was funded not by a supplement company or people that hold a patent on an ecdysterone. It was funded by WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency. And, yeah, they've got a vested interest, but the vested interest is this. They only want to know what really works so they can add it to the banned list. And the authors concluded by saying that ecdysterone was a demonstrated effective anabolic agent and should be added to that list. Folks, it is not cheap to test for new, you know, banned items. And doubly so for ecdysterone, because you not only have to test for the ecdi, and there are 500-plus identified ecdysterones, you also have to test for metabolites. That is not cheap, and they don't add these items if they don't really believe it works. Now, the reason why I think it'll be the compound that most companies will work with is this. Its structure does not resemble testosterone, doesn't resemble anything androgenic. It works through an entirely different mechanism, the estrogen receptor. The way the current legislation is written, anything that structurally resembles testosterone, manipulates hormone levels, or works like testosterone, the FDA can, just like that, take it off the market. And they will. I personally think some of these test boosters are going to be next up. Not that most of them are, you know, worth much, but you're going to see FDA moving on those. They can't really do this with ecdysterone because it's going to be real frustrating for them. Otherwise, you know, even the best minds in the business have really missed the mark, especially over the last 10 years. Now, I'll give credit to Pat Arnold, who identified ursolic acid as a compound of potential interest. It was marketed for muscle gain and fat loss. Interestingly enough, if you look at the studies and the meta-analysis on those studies, ursolic acid, if it did add muscle and strip body fat at an accelerated rate, it was nothing that scientists would term statistically significant. In the real world, you're not going to notice much, if anything. But interestingly enough, there is research showing that it is protective against excessive rises in creatine kinase, myoglobulin, and LDH, lactate dehydrogenase, which are all markers for, right, that are looked at for rhabdomyolysis and all that. So in my specific example, and in people that want to, you know, hedge their bets and so that they don't run into trouble, ursolic acid might very well be something for them to look into. Personally, I am going to be conducting work with my physician to determine whether or not ursolic acid really does this. It's going to be further down the line, but I will keep everyone posted. So that's just a little bit about how I think the supplement market's going to play out over the next 10 years.
What kind of cardio do you think is best? I never hear you talk about cardio, actually.
Well, and that's because for the longest time, in my younger years especially, my reasoning was this. Nobody ever got huge doing cardio. at the time, we really didn't have all of the data that we have today on high-intensity interval training and other forms of cardio that are more lifting-friendly. But after much experimenting, I've identified three types of cardio that I think are optimal for the weightlifter. And those are, number one, hitting the heavy bag. Number two, pushing and pulling the sled work. And farmer's walks, a.k.a. loaded carries. The first place winner of those three, in my opinion, would be hitting the heavy bag. If you've never done this, it is absolutely exhausting. Because while you're throwing punches, kicks, knees, and elbows, you're also trying to move around, right, so that you don't get hit. Especially if you're sparring with somebody who's just holding pads up, and he's moving around, and he's throwing punches back at you. You know, that is about as good as cardio gets. Sled work, by now, it should be well known. I have a couple different ways I do it. Personally, I like doing something called up and down the mountain. I'll do 100 pounds for two trips, 200 for two trips, all the way up to 600 pounds for two trips, and then 500, 400, 300, 200, and 100. It is absolutely grueling, but it's a great way to train. When you're done, I think you'll agree, it's very taxing. Farmers walks and loaded carries, those are in the same league, albeit you should know that they do tax the lower back a little bit more than the sled, and certainly, you know, hitting the heavy bag. But those three should be rotated. And in my opinion, you know, as soon as you feel your system adapting to each one, I have not yet hit the heavy bag to the point where I think, you know, I'm adapting and I'm good to go. It seems to be, you know, I've got a lot of room to run there, so to speak. Generally, I like to perform two sessions of each in rotation, right? So two days you're hitting the heavy bag, 2 days you're doing farmer's walks, and 2 days you're doing sled pushes and pulls. And here's the big thing. All three of these work not just the heart and lungs, like the treadmill or the bike, but also your muscle groups. Another important point, they are concentric-only activities. There's no lowering of the weight. Ergo, there's no tissue damage, which means not only will it not set you back in terms of recovery, the improved blood flow should help. Now, a few other things about the heavy bag and why I like it. In addition to everything that I just mentioned, you learn how to defend yourself, right? Or at least you're capable of throwing punches, knees, elbows, and kicks in combination. And, you know, you're going to be in great cardiovascular shape just from moving around a lot, never mind throwing the punches. If you get proficient in all three, or even two of the three, my experience has taught me the following. You can perform almost any amount of lower intensity, long duration exercise like jogging, et cetera. The reverse, however, is almost never true. You can do tons of distance work, what boxers call road work. When you go to hit a heavy bag or push a sled or carry weight with you in the farmer's walk, it just doesn't translate. You get your butt kicked by that stuff, and it's in your face. You'll see what I'm talking about. So those are my three forms of what I call anabolic cardio. I do those almost, you know, exclusively now. If your mind and your body are asking you for a break, then walk at a reasonable pace for 30 minutes for a couple workouts until you're ready to go back to the heavy stuff. So that's anabolic cardio in a nutshell.
Where do you come down on BCAA intake? A while ago you were pushing it, but shortly afterwards I heard you start talking about EAAs instead.
Well, a long story short, I discovered that BCAAs suck. When taken in the recommended dosage, which at the time was 5 to 10 grams, All that is pissing into the wind. It's not going to do anything. Once I got that up to 20 to 25 grams, you know, intra-workout, I saw, you know, better recovery. Subsequently, I tried the same with essential amino acids, and I noticed a dramatic improvement, even over BCAAs, in terms of recovery and strength increases, which, you know, properly managed, lead to faster gains in building muscle. A lot of this goes back to the following fact. BCAAs will stimulate protein synthesis. You need all nine essential aminos to complete the process. Big difference, real big. And you'll see it within the first month. Now, from there, I discovered that playing with the essential amino acid ratios, you could design a far more effective and efficient product versus straight EAAs in the neighborhood of 30 grams. You can take up to 30 grams. Take 10 grams before, 10 during, and 10 after. It's not going to outperform the milligram amounts, for example, that you get in Synthogen. I mean, it's really dramatic. I've had maybe a dozen guys write me and say, you know what, I thought you were BSing, man, but I did that 30 grams of EAAs, and it doesn't hold a candle, you know, to the ones much lower dosing that you got in Synthogen. Look, the reason to me is very simple. When you work with the essential amino acids, you can manipulate the ratios. All nine give you everything you need to actually grow new muscle. You will find research showing that whey peptides, di and tripeptides, bonds of 2 and 3 amino acids, lead to, you know, better results intra-workout, faster recovery, greater glycogen replenishment. The research doesn't square up. Essential aminos, especially in the right ratios, are much better. Now, you also need to take into consideration this fact. The latest research on BCAAs ain't so good, right? There is even a connection developing, it looks like, between BCAAs and blood sugar disorders, a.k.a. adult onset diabetes. Do I think in a normal, regular, healthy individual that it's a huge risk? Probably not. But if you have a family history or you're borderline and you're fasting blood sugar readings, and maybe even a little bit high, I think you're going to find they go down when you drop your BCAAs. It's exactly what happened in my case. So essentially, if you're still using BCAAs, you're really shortchanging yourself. Now, this is also part of the reason, and a big part, Thrive is without question the number one protein powder on the market. And those of you that are familiar with my recommendations know that for years, I would only recommend two proteins, Mass Pro Whey, and Ultra Peptide 2.0. Thrive has it all over. Why? Because by label, you are getting this separate bolus of essential aminos in addition to the whey and micellar casein mix that is research proven to build more muscle. If you don't believe me, look that up. A mix of whey and casein was superior in every respect to a straight whey, no matter how good it is.
And doesn't it make sense? Because from an evolutionary perspective, that's what we got in mother's milk.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, if we evolved and human mothers produced the perfect food for humans, and it has a ratio, and it's a changing ratio depending on early lactation versus late lactation.
Yep.
But it's a combination of whey and micellar casein. And that that's what whole milk is made from. And so this idea that we deviated from it by stripping out just the whey and just taking the whey, it's counter to what we it's like we're ignoring nature blueprint for the perfect dairy protein for humans, and going, no, we know better. We just need whey.
And you know what? In every instance where man tends to try to improve upon nature. Look what we end up with.
Yeah, exactly.
Frankenfoods, etc. But I'll tell you the thing that really sealed it for me, Carl. You're familiar with the drink recipe that some of my guys have got.
Yes, of course.
And essentially what this is you work up to two of these a day, and your muscle gain, fat loss problems are over. And I sincerely mean that. This can make a dramatic difference. But a few of my guys that got that recipe wrote me back, like, I don't know, a month or two later, and said, hey, man, I tried it. It didn't do anything. Well, what's the deal here? I said, well, tell me what you're using. In every case, instead of using a whey micellar casein mix, they were using a straight whey, which we know blood amino acid levels at about the 90-minute mark disappear. Yes, it leads to a fast rise in right amino acid levels in the blood, but they're almost all gone by 90 minutes because Thrive contains, amongst other things, micellar casein. Micellar casein lasts for up to 7 hours in your system. So let's do some math. You know, with whey, you're getting at best 3 hours.
Yeah.
3 hours of elevated protein.
And in most cases, 90 minutes. In most cases, 90 minutes, yeah.
Well, all right. They're doing it two or times a day. With Thrive, at two shakes a day, at a minimum, you're getting 14 hours of increased protein synthesis.
And do you know why casein is a slow protein? Do you know what makes casein a slow protein?
Congeals in the stomach.
That's right. When it hits the stomach's acid, it turns to cottage cheese in your stomach, and you end up with this ball of protein that digests slowly from the outside in. So it starts out, let's say, the size of a baseball, and as it moves through the intestines, it gets smaller to the size of a golf ball, and it continues to move, and it gets smaller to the, so it's like it creates this time-released bolus in your stomach.
And not only that, but, right, like I said, you've heard me refer to MassPro Whey and UltraPeptide 2.0. Those are fine proteins. Don't get me wrong. They're still quality products. But both fall far short of what the Thrive formula is. And here's the real kicker. If you order the 3-pounder, which I wish we were on Facebook Live because I'd hold it up and show you, I eat my own cooking. But if you order that 3-pounder, it's actually quite a bit cheaper, right, than those other two.
Well, in fact, so right now we have a special, because I want people to go to the website and bring their jug of protein and look at the label claims and then look at the Thrive label and compare what they're getting in theirs, which is probably paltry, compared to what they're getting in a scoop of Thrive, which goes beyond just protein, by the way. I mean, there's real vitamin A, because real vitamin A is responsible for stem cell differentiation in muscle. I mean, there's so many things in Thrive that's in mother's milk that it you can't compare it to another protein powder. It's unfair to other protein powders to compare them to Thrive. And if you use the code COMPARE, COMPARE, inside the contiguous United States, you get a 3-pound jug for $59.95, including shipping. I mean, it's amazing.
It's insane, especially for the formula. Now, one other thing. While you're doing that comparison, I've said this before, but it bears repeating. I want you to compare Thrive's label, to your protein's label. Notice that in most cases, Thrive's label says supplement facts. The other proteins, most of them, are listed as nutrition facts. The fact of the matter is that a product labeled supplement facts has to go through about 100 more quality checkpoints versus a product that uses a nutrition facts label. Those proteins that are actually using nutrition facts are in violation of FDA code and labeling laws. And, you know, it's such a big problem that the FDA has only stepped in several cases to, you know, admonish and fine the retailer until they get that problem fixed. So, look, when you add it all up, Thrive's a no-brainer. Nothing else comes close. If it did, I'd say it. But you've had Thrive out for how long now? A couple of years?
Yeah, and the truth of the matter is that I'm probably going to discontinue it at some point in time because it's just there's no money in it because I'm competing against, you know, commodity products, you know, just crap protein powders that are the cheapest you can buy because no one cares about quality anymore, right? They just care about how many grams and how much does it cost. And I make so little money on it. I mean, I literally make dollars on a three-pound jug, not tens of dollars, dollars. And you know, it's not even worth it anymore.
And for those of you listening who might question that, let me assure you, if you want to lose a lot of money real fast,
make a protein powder.
do a protein powder. And look, I don't want to be without Thrive. So you folks listening, make your next protein order Thrive, please, because I really don't want this stuff to go off the market. It is that head and shoulders above everything else.
Go to thriveprotein.com. Use the coupon code COMPARE. You use the coupon code after you fill everything out, and then it'll adjust the price. You get $59.95 for a three-pound jug, and that includes shipping inside the United States. And try it. So compare the label, but then order it. So everybody that uses Thrive continues to buy it. And hands down, the number one comment I get from people all over the world, I mean, I have people who they want it so bad that we have to work out special arrangements to get it shipped. Like Al Reeves lives in the UK, but he was visiting his mother-in-law in Sweden, and we know how to get it to Sweden, so he was able to cart it home back to the UK. He says, you know, my gut used to bother me after I used to take my protein powder.
Right.
And like my gut, and he says, I take this protein powder, I don't even feel like I took anything. And it's the truth. It's not just because of the quality of the protein. It's also because we put digestive enzymes in it, because guess what? Those enzymes are resident in human breast milk because babies don't produce enough of the enzymes to break down the food. So the mother has to supply it. But we also have, as we're finding out now, Joel Green came on my show and said that the number one microbe in the gut responsible for health and longevity is bifidobacteria. And the older we get, the less we get. And human breast milk is almost predominantly all bifidobacteria. So we have a healthy, not overly excessive, not like it's going to give you SIBO, but we have a healthy dose of bifido in Thrive. You know, again, I look so smart. When you look at the label of Thrive, you go, wow, this is really a lot of different stuff going on in here. Wonder why Carl did it. Carl did it because Mother Nature said so. Mother Nature builds breast milk that way. So I'm like, oh, Mother Nature's smart. Carl's not that smart.
Right.
So.
Yeah. You did just a bang-up job on that.
Yeah, I'm not taking credit for the blend. I'm telling you that right now. I'm just taking credit for having the insight to look at this protein powder from an evolutionary perspective and say, why are we saying that Mother Nature and human breast milk are wrong? Why aren't we capitalizing on what we know? And research is coming out now that shows that when you take whey and casein together, you get a better anabolic response, you get a better thermogenic response, you get all the things that we want.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you taking a fresh look and using critical thinking has resulted in the best protein powder on the market.
Yeah, yeah, but it may just go away. And I'm not just saying that to get people to rush and buy it, because nobody rushes and buys it. But it's just too expensive. And, you know, and Aaron Singerman warned me. He says, Carl, don't introduce a protein powder. He said, because it has the smallest margins of everything. The only reason why I have a protein powder is because it just completes my line. He said, you know, but don't lead off with a protein powder. And he was right. In retrospect, he was right. He knew better. I'm sorry?
I was going to say, you just encapsulated exactly what I heard from other companies.
Yeah. Don't do a protein powder if you want to be successful in the supplement industry. We're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, we have the blueprint tip of the day with Coach Rob Regish. Go to CoachRobRegish.com to learn more. Sign up for the blueprint bulletin. Get amazing information sent to your inbox so that you can be the biggest, strongest person in the gym. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improve the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
New Mass Pro Synthogen X2 just upped its own legendary game. To distance itself even further from the rest of the pack, Synthogen X2 now has double the key active ingredients. If you've ever wondered what steroid-like recovery feels like, Synthogen X2 delivers. See why others compare it favorably to powerful bodybuilding drugs at Synthogen.com. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
Who wants to have better sex? That's a stupid question. Everybody wants to have better sex. And you can start having better sex if you go to the website bluechew.com, BLUECHEW.com. Use the code SHR and get a free order of your choice of the only two FDA-approved drugs to treat erectile dysfunction, sildenafil or tadalafil. Best of all, they're chewable, so they start to work in minutes. Go to bluechew, BLUECHEW.com. Use code SHR and you will get your first order for free. You do have to pay $5 for shipping, but come on, it's an easy deal. Who wants to have better sex? Okay, get busy. You know how to do it now. BPC-157 is quite possibly the most popular injectable peptide used by athletes and weekend warriors alike. Its ability to help you recover faster and make nagging injuries seem to just disappear is legend. Now you can take Body Protection Complex oral supplement and get all the benefits of injectable BPC-157. Dr. C. Seeds.com has produced the first orally delivered BPC product using peptide protein sequences that are easily absorbed in the gut and that will help you recover faster from workout to workout. And now Superhuman Radio listeners can save 20% off their first order of Body Protection Complex at drseeds.com. That's drseeds.com. Just use coupon code SHR at checkout. Don't waste another minute dealing with nagging pain or feeling like you just don't recover like you used to. Body Protection Complex is your answer. Go to drseeds.com. Use coupon code SHR today. Are you looking for a better way to absorb the nutrients you know you need? Do what I do and start your day with lipospheric supplements from Livon Labs. Unlike pills and powders, Livon's patented liposomal encapsulation technology transports nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin B, glutathione, acetyl L-carnitine, and alpha lipoic acid to where they need to be. Your cells. Visit try.liveonlabs.com/Carl to learn why I take these supplements every day to help me perform in the gym and in life. That's try.liveonlabs.com/Carl.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back to the Blueprint Power Hour with Coach Rob Regish. So, Coach, what is the Blueprint tip of the day?
The tip of the day is my update on my continuing battle with rhabdomyolysis. But more importantly, information that I have come across that will allow not just me, but everybody listening to work with their doctor to get better results faster from exercise. So I go to the kidney doctor the other day. He tells me, hey, the good news is your creatinine is normal, 1.2, upper end of the range was 1.35. So I'm finally back within the quote-unquote norms. He said, but we need to get your creatine kinase under control. It's too high. To which I said, okay, but let's have a discussion about what's high and what's too high.
Right.
So I then presented him with two studies that I found, the first being titled The Creatine Kinase Response to Resistance Training, and the second paper being Reference Intervals for Serum CK in Athletes. So I'm going to go over some of the highlights of the first paper with you. This will take some time, but I think you're going to find it pretty interesting. So, in no particular order, there is great individual variability in serum CK, which complicates the assignment of reliable reference values for athletes. So right off the bat, there's some question as to whether the general population norms are appropriate. It goes on to say that the type and amount of intensity threshold during training that induces a rise in CK, the extent to which it rises and falls after exercises, are highly variable and affected by individual factors and exercise variables. So it gets into these individual factors, right, associated with elevated CK. And it starts off just by saying that, interestingly enough, three groups of people have been identified: high responders, medium responders, and low responders. Again, the high end of the range for CK that I'm working with anyway is 200. What it goes on to say is that, unfortunately, there's no consensus regarding a clinical definition of CK activity that establishes an individual as being high responder. Long story short, values of up to 2,000 were established for these high responders. So right off the bat, you know, they're producing a lot more CK than normal people. However it's defined, the difference between high and normal is thought to be at least in part due to genetic variation. So this tells us that there are genes, some of which are still being identified, which might predispose you to higher CK levels. Exercise factors related to CK. This was interesting. Experimental evidence implicates two main stressors as the cause for elevated CK: mechanical stress and metabolic stress. Translation, mechanical stress, adding maybe too much weight to the bar too soon. Metabolic stress is doing that while also really taxing your heart and lungs. And specifically, what they're saying is that elevation in oxygen consumption during exercise leads to a whole cascade of effects, generating a lot of free radicals and consequent damage to cell membranes. What does this tell us? It tells me that antioxidant status really needs to be optimized. Now, of those two, the mechanical factors, adding too much weight too soon, is suggested as most responsible for the muscle injury. Another interesting finding: the amount of work performed was surprisingly small in its effect on CK. It says research to date indicates a more complicated relationship between work performed and the rise in serum CK. What they're essentially saying here is that a high volume routine, you know, won't necessarily do it. Much more likely, a low-volume routine that's high intensity will do it. And certainly, that has been, you know, the case with my training. One all-out set of 20-rep deadlifts, et cetera, et cetera. Also, very interestingly, resistance exercise with short rest periods between sets, 1 minute, versus 3 minute rest intervals may produce a higher rise in serum CK. Now, it goes on to say, again, the short rest intervals led to a significantly higher CK, especially in HR, high responder subjects. So that would be me. So, you know, in the future, I'll be resting at least 3 minutes in between sets. Movement speed. One recent study found that exaggerated movement speeds, either excessively fast versus slow, both of which, when you manipulate those, led to higher rise in CK. So this tells us that, you know, a more normal rep tempo, at least in my case, is more appropriate. Muscle groups, interestingly enough, upper body workouts resulted in elevated CK responses much more so than lower body workouts. that's counterintuitive to my mind, because the larger muscle groups lift more weight, right? Not sure what's going on there. I speculate it's because you use your lower body all the time walking. And so they go on to say it's ideal to use specific exercise models of specific muscles to understand the nature of muscle damage in a given muscle group. Strategies to reduce the rise in CK. All right, so here we go. The most prominent controllable variable that alters the magnitude of CK rise after exercise is familiarization with the activity. In other words, if you're doing something that you haven't ever done before or haven't done in a long time, you're more at risk. Interestingly enough, though, if you get that session in without problems, a single exposure to that bout of resistance exercise diminishes the rise in CK to a subsequent bout of that same exercise. And here is the fascinating aspect of that. That protective effect lasted up to 6 months following the initial exposure. Here we go. Now we're really going to get rolling. Nutritional intervention. Several studies have investigated the use of dietary supplements to offset CK. Essential amino acids appears to offset rises in serum CK after exercise.
Now think about why that might be.
Well, the accelerated repair and wound healing comes to mind.
Right, and also the body may be scavenging amino acids from the muscles, and part of the breakdown, the rapid breakdown, is the release of those amino acid pools.
Yes, and listen to this. Amino acid supplementation in subjects who were already ingesting recommended levels of EAAs in their diets.
Through protein, in other words.
Yep, reduce the rise of CK, myoglobin, and LDH after either vigorous endurance exercise or resistance exercise.
So it doesn't matter if you're eating enough protein. The EAAs have a value.
Exactly, right? Perfect translation. It goes on to mention creatine, although it says that the results are conflicting over the relationship between creatine and the integrity of the muscle structure. It mentions HMB as being equivocal. I think you know my opinion on that as well. And, of course, the use of antioxidants in ursolic acid that I mentioned before. Other ways to do it. Cold and hot contrast showers, which I first read about in Bulgarian burst, Leo Costa's Bulgarian burst training, will lower CK. Massage apparently does it the best, but unless your insurance plan covers it, I'd say most athletes are going to have a hard time maybe affording the sessions at least on a regular basis.
Yep.
Hot and cold therapy can certainly help, and that would be something I'd look into. So now we get to concluding remarks. Interpreting the meaning of CK and other circulating muscle proteins is challenging. CK appears to be more of use as a qualitative marker that some trauma has occurred to the muscle, rather than as a quantitative indicator of, in other words, the extent of the muscle damage. Big individual variations. Upper body workouts, again, put you more at risk than lower body ones. And interestingly enough, listen to this, there is currently no established link between an exaggerated CK response and exertional rhabdomyolysis. It concluded by saying that subjects who displayed abnormally large increases in CK after exercise may have some unrecognized subclinical pathology. So my doctor mentioned that he would be testing me for that, just to rule those out. The second paper, and I'll keep this shorter, but it really says it all. This is reference intervals for serum creatine kinase in athletes. The conclusions were as follows. In summary, by analyzing serum samples of 483 male athletes and 245 female in a variety of sports, the following reference range intervals for the concentration of CK in males, it was up to 1,083. In females, up to 513. Again, upper end of the range in normal folks that all these doctors use is 200. The difference from the upper limits reported for inactive individuals in the literature is more dramatic, being more than sixfold in males and females. Okay? The difference between physically active and inactive non-athletes suggests the need for a revision of the reference ranges in accordance with the guidelines for people doing regular exercise. And listen to this. When reference ranges were calculated specifically in male football players and swimmers, a threefold difference in the upper reference limit was found, up to 1492 in males. That is potentially your upper limit, okay? Here, okay, now, this study, right, there's talking about it being done on football players and swimmers. Here's the punchline. This study was done in Greece. So when they're talking about football, they're talking about soccer, a sport where I would expect much less.
Oh, yeah, they're running constantly. It's much different than our game of football.
Right, right. They didn't even get into weightlifting. So what they said was introducing specific reference ranges in athletes and further reference ranges according to sport may protect physicians from misinterpreting high CK values as pathological ones. And this is my favorite line of the whole thing, because before reading this paper, I proposed this to my GP doc. Coaches could maximize training adaptations and performance gains by employing training loads resulting in CK values closer to the upper reference limits of their sport. Now, I gave him the studies, and I stayed quiet. I gave him the chance to flip through everything.
Right, but he's got, you got to give him more time, I would imagine, right? You got to let him go home with it.
Well, the interesting thing is this. After seeing all of that, he sat back in his chair, and there was a long pause, and this was really weird. He didn't blink once, and then said the following, "You're not my average patient." But look, this has implications for you. I would propose that working with your doctor and measuring CK levels while you're doing whatever, XYZ, you know, weight training protocol, can help you optimize. They say it in this study. It will help you optimize training loads to be within CK norms for your sport while avoiding some of the problems. Okay? So this is a big deal. And in fact, you know, I think back to a lot of the other bad things that happened to me in the course of my training career. They're only bad things if you don't look at what the good things could be. And this is potentially a very, very good thing.
Well, this is what we have suspected all along, right? We've talked about the fact that CK is not the end-all and be-all in rhabdo, and physicians telling people that they have rhabdo because their CK levels are high, but they have no symptoms whatsoever, is a very, very dangerous thing. Very,
yeah.
Very dangerous thing. But yeah. This is an amazing bit of information you've put together. Amazing, really.
The amazing part to me is that they haven't even studied the CK response in what I would consider the more demanding sports of American football, weightlifting, you know, and listen, weightlifting, I would be willing to bet you, is going to be different than bodybuilding. That might be different than powerlifting.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of food for thought here. I would encourage you to look into this, and maybe, you know, the next time you see your GP, or primary care doc, you know, casually bring it up and say, I want to, number one, do this to take responsibility for my own health, because I realize there's a risk to overdoing it. And I'd like to work with you to establish, you know, what the upper limits are for me. For me.
Yeah, I don't think many doctors are going to say, I think they're going to have a problem with that.
Unless they see a blood value that's off, yeah. But maybe, you know, perhaps not entirely. Here's how I would approach it. You know, I would punch up a couple of studies showing athletes in exertional rhabdomyolysis and elevated CK levels, and just be frank with the doc. Say, listen, you know, this isn't a hobby for me. This is what I do. This is who I am. You know, we need to make sure that what happened to these people doesn't happen to me.
Okay.
And that's that'll probably be a lot more tenable a request than, hey, I want to optimize my performance levels, which really is what I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Those are my two CCs, and if you ask me, we're going to look back in a few years from now and say, this was a big deal.
Yep, I agree.
This was a big
deal. We're just starting to get to it now. Just because more and more people are getting rhabdo. And more people going, wait a minute, you know, what's going on here?
Right.
So.
Right, because the knee-jerk reaction is going to be, oh, God, your CK levels are elevated. Look, you're at 1,000 instead of 200. You're in rhabdo. Well, no, you're not. You know, if your kidney function is okay and none of the other values are thrown off, you might just be one of these, quote-unquote, high responders.
Right.
You might have the gene. Or you might have overdone your training. But either way, you're much rather going to want to know what the situation is versus being ignorant of it. That's like, to me, this is like not taking your blood pressure. You know? There's a reason it's called the silent killer. You're ignoring it. Or you don't, let me put it this way, you don't feel it. You might not piss blood.
Right.
You know, I only did that once, but you know, at a minimum, having this information will help you avoid overtraining, and I think there's a lot of that out there today. I'll be honest.
I agree.
Yep. So it's going to be an incredible journey, and it'll probably be the subject of a lot of future, you know, blueprint tip of the day. Yeah. In the hopes that it helps you. Because what I'm doing in the gym probably is not a whole lot different than what you and the other listeners are doing. So it's a big deal.
Thank you so much, Coach. This is good information.
Bet.
Very, very good information. It's going to help a lot of people. And
I hope.
We may have a show tomorrow, it looks like. We may. I'm communicating with somebody right now. So we're going to see. I may do a show on ketamine for depression.
Really?
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting one. Well, whenever you can do it.
Yeah, because ketamine has some real value. Some real value.
Sure does.
And it's scary because a lot of people use it, you know, as a recreational drug.
Yeah, I never tried it, but, you know, I've heard the story. So as with everything else, take it with a grain of salt until you get the straight... The straight talk on this.
Well, these are actual physicians using ketamine to cure depression.
There you go.
I actually had a conversation with somebody this weekend about it. And then I saw a post this little while ago from a physician friend of mine on my Facebook wall. And I was like, can you come and talk about this on the show? Because I think it's important.
Now, is it considered a kind of...
No, like, ketamine is an anesthetic. But a lot of people use it in high doses, and you go into what's known as a keyhole. So when you use high doses of ketamine, you just can't do anything. You just lay around and do nothing.
Is it considered like kind of like a research chemical? Is that how it
No, works? No. It's a prescription drug. There's doctors using it for – there's doctors prescribing it now. And you do it – like you do it once every 3 months. The effects last like 3 months. And it has some – neuroplasticity promoting effects in the brain. So like, you do, like I know people that they do it 3 times a year and then all of a sudden they're doing it twice a year and then all of a sudden they're not doing it anymore and the depression just goes away.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
It's a really interesting compound. It's very misunderstood because it's abused as a recreational drug.
Once every 3 months?
Yep. Yeah, for most people, the effects last about 3 months.
Yeah, that's going to be, I would imagine, that's going to be very economic friendly.
The problem is that, from what I understand and a little bit of research I've done already on it, and that's why I want to have them on, like, you have to be in a hospital or in a setting because it makes a lot of people feel horrible. The dose that they have to give you to have this effect, and that's what they call the K-hole or the keyhole. Like, when people use this stuff in high doses, they all they can do is just stay home and lay around. They can't do anything. They don't even want to go out into the world. They don't want to drive a car. It actually slows your ability to respond to stuff down dramatically. It's not like heroin, but it's more like it gives you – it freezes up brain function. But that's how it has its effect as well.
Is there any risk of well, obviously, anything can be overdosed, but is it like Kratom? You take it, if you take too much, you just throw up?
I don't know about that. We'll find out, I guess.
Wow. Cool. Exciting stuff, man.
Yeah. Sounds good.
Thank you for having me. I put a lot into this. I hope it showed. And I'm hopeful it's going to help a lot of people.
And thanks, everybody, for listening today. And we may have a show tomorrow. I'll let you know. But thank you for listening today. Talk to you soon. All right, Rob. See you later.
Bye-bye.